Hello and welcome to Books on the Go, a podcast where we talk about our book of the week. I'm Anna Bailey-Karras and I'm here with Amanda Hayes. Hi, Amanda.
Hi, Anna. Hello, everyone.
And this week we've been reading Crossroads by Jonathan Franzen. But first, book news, and we're just doing some more TikTok news. My daughter will be horrified that I'm even talking about
TikTok.
Are you
on TikTok, Anna?
No. And I don't think she'd let me be.
No, I feel like I'm... You know, if we all go on TikTok, it'll ruin it the way we've ruined Facebook for the younger people.
We're too old.
Too old.
However, I love what they're doing with books. So we've talked about book talk in past episodes and the effect that's had on getting people reading books and the huge impact it has when a TikToker recommends a book.
Yes.
The latest iteration of that is the TikTok shop has launched a partnership with HarperCollins, WH Smith and bookshop.org, which is fantastic. I had to look up what the TikTok shop is, but because I'm not even on it. But
yeah, tell me.
I think what it is so if you're in the TikTok app, you can shop for things, and this now includes books.
Oh,
so
great.
If you're watching something and you see a book recommended and you think, great, I want to buy it, you can buy it without leaving the TikTok
app. You don't have to go to Amazon.
So they're making it more user-friendly. But
excellent.
The nice thing is they've partnered with HarperCollins and WH Smith, as I said, and bookshop.org. Mm. So that's an online book seller, but it links with some of the independent bookstores as well. So it's a competitor in a way to Amazon, and it's a nice alternative if you want to support your local bookshop. You can do that. A fantastic idea. So you can buy the book in the TikTok app and also be supporting your local bookstore, which is great, without leaving home.
Yeah.
Fantastic.
The other thing that's happening is they've partnered with the Hay Festival to try and increase audiences and, you know, bring literary festivals to a more diverse group. So I think that's
excellent.
Yeah, me too.
I noticed that as well.
In fact, my daughter, my 19-year-old, she walked in this morning as I was having a quick look at this TikTok phenomenon. And she buys all her books based on recommendations from BookTok.
Really?
That's just what, you know, a 19-year-old does.
Well, what I like about it is I think it is actually getting people who don't normally read a lot to read more. That's the fun part.
Maybe it's made reading cool again.
Yeah. It was always cool.
Yeah, well, I was going to say exactly.
No, we love being book nerds. So on to our book of the week, Crossroads by Jonathan Franzen. And this doesn't really need much introduction, does it? But Jonathan Franzen is an American author. He's written 5 novels, including The Corrections, Freedom and Purity, and now Crossroads. So there's one, obviously, maybe there was one before The Corrections, I believe.
Yeah,
that
I
was
think
his second or third novel.
I think it was his third.
And that was released, I want to say 2001, The Corrections, that is, and it was a huge bestseller. I think it won the National Book Award. It's been billed at times as sort of the great American novel. It was about a family, a dysfunctional family, although he now says that wasn't really a family novel, which is interesting because they were never all in the same place at the same time. It was just each individual's story that was interwoven, but a huge success. And notably, when The Corrections came out, Oprah chose it as one of her picks for the Oprah Book Club. And back in that time, she had been choosing, you know, a range of books, but some that were more considered women's fiction at the time. And Jonathan Franzen declined to be included, or he didn't decline.
He made some comments along the lines that, you know, now that I've been chosen for Oprah, it's going to put men off reading my book. And he also said that a lot of what she chooses is schmaltzy, and, you know, he didn't know if he wanted to be, you know, put in the same basket. So he made those comments, and then he was disinvited.
Yes.
They've since kissed and made up.
They did. So she said, I didn't intend, you know, to make him feel awkward, so we won't be including that in next month. And it just didn't come across well. So he had a lot of bad press from that. And what was interesting, when I was reading up again about that last night, because I remembered it at the time, but I'd forgotten the details. But looking back now with this sort of 20 years ago, what was interesting was that back at that time, it was – so much more the case that men would be reviewed in, let's say, the New York Times or those major newspapers. Men's books would be reviewed so much more than women's books. And this was sort of seen as part of the issue that he didn't want to be associated with women's fiction. And he was trying to cross the line between smart fiction and, you know, commercial fiction. But he was still not wanting to be associated with the more commercial fiction. And it was so interesting that at that time that was a real issue, such that then I think Jennifer Weiner made some comments about his attitudes, and that's when they started tracking how many women got reviewed and that sort of thing, which we now have in Australia as well through the Stella Prize. I think they do a similar index. And it has now much improved. But it's fascinating to me. He was sort of one of these figures that generated such commentary.
Unwittingly, in a
way. And then Freedom, again, was very well reviewed. Purity probably didn't hit the same sort of highs as those two novels. And he's also then written some nonfiction, which, again, he's been criticised for, including an essay on Edith Wharton where he apparently dwelled on the fact that she was – I haven't read the essay, I should add, but he dwelled on the fact that she wasn't attractive.
Yeah.
And that just
– so just irrelevant.
It just didn't go down well. And he sort of gets himself into hot water. So the article that I was reading last night on Vox just said, look, he's actually, you know, a good novelist and maybe not so good with the essays.
Yeah.
But with Crossroads, the latest book, it's been getting good reviews. And in some cases, people are saying, the Telegraph said it's his best novel yet. The general consensus of the reviews that I've seen is it's a return to form. So the Crossroads is about the Hildebrandt family, and he says it's his first family novel, and it's set in the 1970s. It's intended to be the first book in a trilogy, which he's calling The Key to All Mythologies. It is the Hildebrandt family set in New Prospect, which is around Chicago. The father, Russ, is a he's a pastor.
Yeah, suburban pastor.
Like a reverend or a pastor. And his wife, and then they've got four children, I believe. Yeah. So we've got Clem, we've got
Becky,
that's it, and Perry, who's a sort of troubled genius teenager, and Judson, the youngest one, who doesn't feature, but Jonathan Franzen said he most identifies with Judson. Anyway, most of the action takes place around the youth group at the church, and it's this sort of strange thing where the youth group is actually quite cool, and partly because there's quite a cool young minister, Russ Ambrose.
He's the main character. Rick Ambrose.
The kids sort of gravitate towards him, and by contrast, the father, Russ, is just really out of touch and socially awkward. And so there's sort of a comical contrast between those two figures, and Russ has sort of been politely asked not to be involved too much with the youth group because he kept making inappropriate comments to the girls inadvertently and getting himself into trouble. So that's the sort of main, I suppose, motif that we keep coming back to, this youth group and where some of the main events happen. And then it's similar to the Corrections, that style, where you go through each character, you know, has a chapter, and you alternate between the characters. So you start to learn their backstory. So Marion, his wife, and how she came to be married to Russ, and trying to be the really good wife, but she's starting to rebel, and all the reasons that that might happen. And then Clem, who's more conservative, eldest son, who's perhaps going to study, but he starts to come off the rails as well. So they're all quite dysfunctional. Becky, who's the socially very successful, popular girl at school, but also then gets involved with the youth group. And then Perry, who's probably the most interesting character, who is troubled genius, a drug addict, and trying to kick the habit, or trying to turn over a new leaf, and variously failing and succeeding depending which point in the novel. And he did make me think of David Foster Wallace, who Jonathan Franzen was good friends with, and who also had drug addiction problems, among other things, but was quite a genius intellectually and an author, as we know. And, you know, as a teenager, I wondered if that was inspiring some of Perry's character, but that could be me reading into it. And then Judson, who doesn't really feature very much. So it goes on, it's about 600 pages and it covers only, I think, 6 months in their life. So quite long. And that's when Jonathan Franzen realised it will have to be a trilogy. So as I said, it's been getting really good reviews. The Telegraph said it's his best novel yet, a Middlemarch-like triumph. And it was an instant New York Times bestseller, a Guardian Best Fiction of 2021, an Independent Book of the Year. So very successful so far. We're quite late to coming to read it now, 2022. What did you think, Amanda?
Okay, Anna, I had quite a mixed reaction to this book. I haven't read The Corrections, which I do now want to read, I must add, but I've read Freedom, which I really enjoyed, Purity, which I didn't like very much. When Crossroads came up as a book to read, I wasn't immediately excited by that. So I really like the way he writes. He's just so clever. And because I've had a few issues with some of the things he said, like the Oprah incident, that you just, I don't know, irks you a little bit. So I thought, okay, I'm going to read this book and I'm also going to keep an open mind. So I watched a few snippets of interviews with him. I thought, okay, I want to see what he's like when he's interviewed. And I have to say, I did warm to him a bit. I think from the sounds of a lot of the clangers that he has said in the past have been a bit taken out of context. So as Anna said, this is a family, his first family novel, because what he says is it's about a family and how they all interact with each other. Each of them is going through their own dramas and how that sort of plays off other family members and how they deal with it. So it really is, in that way, I thought it was fantastic. He really, the way he meshed them all together was really clever. So he's asked in an interview, you know, what does family mean to you? And I think that's a really legitimate question if you're saying I'm writing a family novel. He rambled on for about 10 minutes. He was clearly so concerned about not sort of putting anyone offside that he, in the end, he basically didn't answer the question. But the funny thing was at the end, he said, I don't think Merriam-Webster would be very happy with that definition. But that made me think perhaps he's a little bit gun shy of really saying what he thinks.
Also maybe not great in interviews. That one of the articles said he's just not very good at giving a soundbite. Yeah. And that's how he gets, partly how he gets taken
in trouble.
Out of context, partly because he says the things he says. Yeah. But he gives these long answers and they're looking for just a couple of words, and so it might come across badly in the headline.
So I think that's what's happened. And, you know, just because you're an author doesn't mean that you have to be excellent at being interviewed, and even though it's kind of expected, I think, of authors these days. I love the way it was written. He's really clever with words. So for me it was a real page turner from that point of view. I did think it was a little bit long. Some of the backstory, I think he could have just edited out a bit, trimmed down a bit. That, for me, that got a little bit tedious. Probably the thing that I struggled with the most was, if you call Russ Hildebrandt, the minister, the main character, or certainly one of the main characters, I really struggled to find anything about him that I could empathise with or even like. In fact, Jonathan Franzen says he creates complex characters, but I didn't actually find him complex in the sense that there were contradictions and good and bad. I just found him an odious man with no self-awareness who sort of had quite immature views.
Yeah, and he was the nerdy or unpopular guy at high school who could never attract any girls, who then later in life, because he has a position as a minister, has more opportunity, and he's trying to make up for lost time.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
With the chip on his shoulder, though, because he never was very successful.
Yes.
So he's constantly trying to prove himself. But the complexity, maybe Jonathan Franzen was talking about the fact that he's also trying to do good work. Russ Hildebrandt, that is, trying to do good work in the communities that they serve, going to the soup kitchens. And so perhaps the complexity is supposed to be that he's thinking constantly about committing adultery, but he's also trying to do good work in the community.
In fact, that was one of the clever parts of the novel, the adultery that he, you know, he's wanting to commit with one of his parishioners. Her name's Frances. She's great. She's not great. She's the clueless white person who tries to help. She's sort of perhaps got good intentions, but she's got absolutely no idea. And she constantly offends people. And he's in this awkward position where he wants to protect her, but he doesn't want to offend other people. So he's trying to walk the line.
There's a lot of comedy to be had. I'm probably a bit like you, Amanda. I really liked how it was written. I think Jonathan Franzen is a great writer. And what I liked about this one, and it's a long time since I've read Freedom and the Corrections, but he himself said he thinks he's improved in this regard, which is that it's really, really rich, colourful, often quite funny writing, but not showy. So it's always serving the story, which is why, as you say, it's a page turner.
Yeah.
It's not drawing attention to itself. You often get one or the other. So the authors who can write a great story and the writing's fine, or the writing is really fabulous but it's too much, you know, it can be really overwritten. So he's really, and he thinks he's got better at this over the years, just taking out anything that's not needed and just giving us the story.
In that vein, he did say he, as the author, he wants to become invisible. And I would say he's definitely achieved that.
Yeah.
He's not saying, oh, look what I can do.
Exactly, which is great. So I really enjoyed that. And it means you can relax into it and just really get into the story. And what he tries to do, so taking someone like Russ Hildebrand, for example, and where the comedy comes into it is he's taking a character who is pretty odious, who I think he shares our view about. I think Jonathan Franzen sort of shares our view. So we're in on the secret, we're in on the joke, as it were. And he's taking him and saying, okay, he wants to have an affair and there's nothing sexy about Russ, so there's nothing that immediately would make you be on his side as far as this goes. And he's saying, okay, so immediately we're all off Russ. So now I'm going to take you into Russ's head and give you the story from his point of view and just see if you can empathise a little bit with him, because he's put himself into this awkward situation. And so that's where part of the comedy comes, and part of the, I suppose, the skill of his storytelling is that you find yourself thinking, oh, okay, I wonder if Russ is going to manage to get on, you know, this part of the trip so that he can be alone with Frances. And for me, it didn't really work as far as the Russ storyline goes, because I really didn't care. I didn't want him to have anything to do with Frances. I didn't care about this trip that they were going up into the hills. He was just, as you say, so unlikable.
Yeah.
But I love the attempt, and I love that that's the setup, that we're going into the heads of each of these characters. And so each one in turn, you sort of feel what it's like to be in their shoes. I most responded to Perry. I thought he really captured him very well. And you did, maybe because he's a teenager, but you felt like there was a chance he could turn out to be a bit better, as a better human. And I think that was one of the themes, is, you know, what does it take to be a good person? And that's Perry's really actively grappling with it, whereas I thought Russ was too far gone.
Yeah, I agree.
But the irony is, of course, Russ thinks he's a good person already. All of them were quite unlikable and dysfunctional, and so it all got a bit much, in the sense that I didn't particularly want to spend time with them, and it was too long. I agree.
Yeah.
And that's where you start to think, is it a bit self-indulgent to have just so much book about this white family in 1970s America? Why?
Yeah. So Anna...
And why do we... I mean, I can't imagine needing a trilogy.
I was going to ask you, would you read the next?
I don't need to.
Yeah, that was how I felt when I was reading it. I didn't realise that it was potentially part of a trilogy, although Franzen does say he wants each book in the trilogy to stand alone. Based on the characters, I don't think I'd pick up another book about them. I just didn't care enough about them. Even though it was beautifully written, there wasn't enough of a hook in for me to want to I don't care what happens to them.
That's the problem, isn't it? But I felt a bit the same. I think I've spent enough time with them now to think, I've met the family. That's enough. I don't need to
go on a holiday with them.
Don't need to go on a holiday with them. That's right. So I was a bit the same as you. But it was a strong book. But I might leave it there with Jonathan Franzen. Mm. Well, I might leave it there with the Hildebrands.
Yeah, I'm with you on that one, Anna.
So that was Crossroads by Jonathan Franzen. Let us know if you have read it and what you thought. Coming up, we'll be reading The Marriage Portrait by Maggie O'Farrell. And in the meantime, you can follow us on Facebook at Books on the Go or email us at booksonthegopodcast@gmail.com. And I'm on Instagram, Twitter and Litzy at A. Bailey Karras. And Amanda?
I'm on Instagram at vibrant_lives_podcast and on Facebook at Vibrant Lives Podcast.
Fantastic. And you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts or Spotify or wherever you get your podcasts. And that's always good because it helps people find us.
It does.
And we will see you next week. Bye for now.
Bye.